When the sun comes back and the first quail calls, follow the drinking gourd. The old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. The old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. The riverbed makes a mighty fine road. Dead trees will show you the way. Left foot, peg foot, traveling on. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. The old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. The river ends between two hills. Follow the drinking gourd. There's another river on the other side. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. The old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd. I thought I heard the angels say, follow the drinking gourd. The stars in the heavens gonna show you the way. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. The old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom. Follow the drinking gourd.
You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. The views expressed on this program are not those of the underwriters or anyone else. They are of the individuals that speak them, and not necessarily of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Hey folks, it is time for Local Folk here on Portsmouth Community Radio. I'm your host, Steve Carrigan, and I am bringing to you the people that make folk culture happen. Stay tuned for the music and the stories of my guests, who are here to share with you a bit of their personal selves and or musical selves and personal histories. And just by listening, you are participating in the local folk culture, and I hope you continue to do so by getting out there and seeing something live or going to a festival or buying a CD or, hey, heck, just go down to the pub and listen to a traditional music session or something like that. Get going, or just continue to listen to this program for now. My guests, I have two guests tonight. They are up from Maryland. And I met them when I was at a folk party, basically, in Connecticut a while back. And though they individually were very cool, and I wanted to have them on, between the two of them, they really bring some serious assets to the folk world. Guest number one, the he of the couple, is involved in sound reinforcement for folk musicians. This is not an easy task, believe me. To get technology-shy folkies to sound good on stage requires not only an intimate knowledge of the gear and how to use it, but an understanding of the folk mentality and how to make that work with a stage and a microphone, two things that do not always go well with what I'm calling a quote-unquote folk mentality. He's the go-to guy not only for the Saturday night show that we had at the big folk party that we went to, but he's also on the main stage at Mystic Seaport Maritime Music Festival. I'm not sure if that's the official name, but he does the main stage for all this great maritime music that's happening. Just happened, in fact, down in Mystic Seaport. Both my guests have just come from the festival, and I hope to hear at least a little bit about it. The she half, a.k.a. the better half of the couple, is involved in an area of traditional music that I think, and I may be wrong, has yet to experience a true renaissance in the American, you know, the larger, more general America, at least in my generation, unlike the blues, which I think became popular with rock and roll and Celtic music and its resurgence via Riverdance type productions and things like that. Anglo-American folk music enjoys a place right now where it can be itself, which is without airs, which is a really great thing, I think. And we're going to find out about this music and where to find it and how to share it and where to go from here. So without further ado, I welcome Dennis and Judy Cook. Welcome to the show, Dennis and Judy.
Thank you, Steve.
That was the best unison thank you ever.
We've been married too long.
41 years, still speaking.
41 years and still speaking. Well, that's amazing. Well, and between the two of you, so much experience with folk music and so much education about it and all kinds of different aspects that it's hard to even know where to begin. But Dennis, you were closest to me, so I'm going to start with you. All right. I just have to share a story with you folks out there, and that is that I was at this big folk party and there was a stage and they had a, you know, a concert on Saturday night. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, boy, this has got to be a difficult thing to do. I mean, most folk people that I know, and even some non-folk musicians, just have a really tough time being on stage with microphones and all things like that. And I said, this person really has a difficult job. And would you agree?
I would call it challenging.
Challenging. Okay.
But I love doing it. So it's...
Do you love it doing it because it's challenging?
In part because it's challenging, in part because I love the music, and it's a way I can contribute. My memory for lyrics is absolutely rotten.
Okay.
So if I'm singing along with Judy on something, I lip read.
Okay. And if you don't, if it's only two of you, then you're not going to be able to get away with not singing, right?
You got it.
You know, sometimes when you're in a chorus, you can be like, watermelon. It's not going to work, though, right?
No, that
unless
won't work
that's
at
the
all.
Lyric to the song. I know some songs
yeah,
about watermelons.
Watermelon
songs,
so. So, well, between the two. Now, Judy, you are on stage singing, or on stage, or probably more likely in a library. Or at a museum, or what types of places are
those types of places? Yep. To universities, to folk clubs in England and the United States. And yeah, I come from a long line of people who loved getting up and talking about what they're excited about.
Who loved getting up and talking
or
about.
Or sharing what they're excited
sharing
about.
Sharing what they're excited about.
Preachers, teachers, elocutionists, no other folk singers, just me.
Really? Okay. But you learned through a different example. Preachers, teachers, what was it? Elocutioners?
My grandmother was an elocutionist. She was much in demand, I understand, as an after-dinner speaker. She could talk like a man, they said. I never knew her.
Wow, like a man. Probably not the tone.
I don't know. It's possible.
Maybe she could swear like a sailor. We don't know.
We don't. It's tough to say.
I kind of don't believe that. But
so here we are. A question for you, Dennis. When you are at these folk events, do you find that it's difficult to talk to people about the technology that you're using to make them sound good because they don't know about it?
It varies quite a bit. Some people are extremely professional about it, and they tend to be very easy to do sound for. They're very comfortable with a mic. They know how to use it. Other people kind of look at this thing sitting in front of them like a large black apple that's about to come bite them.
Well, just to give an example of the kinds of music that you do sound for, I have this right here. Let me just see if I can bring it up for just a moment. If I can even, if I can make this, let's see if I can make this happen. Well, I don't know. Maybe I can't.
The joys of technology, yes.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? There we go. Can you hear that now?
That's from the finale at Mystic, which has got all the performers on stage that were there the whole weekend, and other than the person who's singing lead,
Don Cinetti.
In this case, Don.
Yeah.
You don't like it.
You don't mic it.
It's
okay.
Just kind of even across.
So this is what you're doing. For
there's like 10 mics up there, and one of them is really up.
Okay, because I was looking at, this is a YouTube thing, and so I'm looking at all these mics, and I'm like, boy, I wonder if he's doing EQ to this or what, you know, or any of that. What I'm playing, I doubt, is what came through the soundboard. It's just But, I mean, Don Cinetti has such a huge voice. I mean, you must not even have to turn him up very much at all.
No, you don't.
I mean, he's this huge, huge guy with a huge voice. Let's listen to this for one sec. Okay, now I'm gonna bring that down for a minute. That's to give you one idea of the kind of thing that goes on over there. And I just have one more example because this is a different story. This is a different thing altogether right here. I'm gonna bring this up. You know who this is?
My lotus lady, I'll see no more. China,
that's pretty
shore.
Tough.
Like, is that Chris?
No. This is, I'm looking at them right now, so I know, and I know him personally. It's Charlie Ipkar, and he's not Charlie singing. He's the one that adapted that song.
Yeah.
But this is a roll and go up on stage. Yeah, so we've got six people, six mics, a banjo, and this and that. And so that presents a totally another challenge altogether, right?
Yes, it does. I mean, the basic idea of mixing sound for a group like that is try and make sure everybody has a place in the spectrum and can get heard, and let them take their leads and balance things out.
I've heard that there's no animal that really sounds like another animal. I mean, there's a couple that sound that try intentionally to imitate other animals, but basically, mm-hmm. you know that song, All God's Creatures Have a Place in the Choir.
Bill Staines.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess they did a scientific study. He's right.
Well, this is. I mean, this is part of the thing. I do studio work at home, and. If you're mixing a CD or if you're mixing a group on stage, it's pretty much the same thing. You've got basically three dimensions to work with. You've got volume, you've got spectrum. Where they are in the frequency spectrum, and you've got placement if you're doing a stereo mix. So are they off to the left or off to the right? And you can use those three in combinations to literally try and make everybody in the group and every instrument in the group have their own place in somebody's mind listening to it.
See, I'm going to keep that spectrum part in mind because I have a feeling that when I go to try to mix things, I put all the same frequencies all at the same place. It turns to mud, but if you start thinking about spectrum, I bet you can get some separation.
Some of the hardest things to separate are like a mandolin and a guitar.
Yes.
Because they really are very close in frequency, but you can usually listen to them and say, well, for this particular mandolin and this particular guitar, one of them sounds a little brighter, a little higher frequencies, and the other sounds a little warmer, and so you accentuate that by the equalization you put on, and so you can pull them apart.
So even individuals who are going out there with their own PA and they only have three little, you know, they have a low, medium, and high can still create some kind of separation.
Sure.
Okay. So
and it also depends on how you mic it.
Okay.
Because where you place the microphone on an instrument has a big effect on how it sounds.
Now, do you use DI boxes?
Some people do.
Do you plug in? Do you plug people in? Or do
personally, for doing things like Mystic or any stage acts where you haven't had a real good sound check before and it's kind of on the fly, I really prefer microphones.
Okay, because you have better adjustment of that.
It's less fiddling and... sometimes people forget to change batteries.
Yep.
Sometimes people forget to throw switches between. Okay. And it's just more fiddly on stage. You're much better off work with a microphone.
Less layers of complication
in
that case.
And a microphone's really more flexible, too. Because if you're playing an instrument, let's just say you're playing guitar, and you decide to take a lead, you move in on the microphone. As you get closer to the microphone... you give it more signal, your sound gets louder. When you're just playing the boom chucks in the background, you can back off. The sound man doesn't have to do anything.
Now, I want to get back to this very important point, and it has to do with how people use microphones and how they think about it, but I have to say that I saw the way that you mic'd up Judy.
Well, that was sneaky.
Well, that was sneaky, but it's the first time that ever... How were you... you were mic'd up. Well, you know, it's the first time that I've seen it, and I know that it's the right way to go. Tell me about that.
I have a headset mic that the microphone itself attaches to my glasses with a small rubber band.
Oh.
And I have a transmitter, which I conceal about my person.
What?
And,
okay, see, I didn't even see that.
Back at the board.
I wasn't even talking about that. I didn't even know about that. That's really neat.
Oh, you were probably talking about the instrument mics.
I was talking about the instrument mics and how they were properly...
I was playing an English concertina.
Mm-hmm.
Which has sound coming out of both ends,
mm-hmm.
and not the middle. And if you only mic one side, then you get only half the notes mic'd.
And if you try to mic it from the front,
you're in the dead spot.
You're in the dead spot,
which is also where the player is located, which is what makes people sometimes consider a concertina a noisy instrument.
Why do they consider it that? A noisy. I heard your song about it being a noisy instrument. Hey, here's just we can't play that. We're not going to play the song, but I do. Can you just please tell that story about the song that you sang about the noisy instrument? Because this is part of folk is not just the music; it's the story. Please tell me this
story. Well, back in, I believe it was 1882, the son of the person who started the Salvation Army was fined 10 shillings in St. Albans, England, for playing a noisy instrument, to wit, a concertina. He appealed the fine, and the court to whom he appealed did not have a concertina. They couldn't tell if it was a noisy instrument or not. So they wrote back to St. Albans explaining their plight, and a poet of the day, an anonymous poet, wrote a bit of doggerel guessing what that letter might have been like.
Mm-hmm. What that letter might have been like.
And Al Cruz, who is a fellow in Biddeford, Devon, England, wrote a tune to it. And I was tickled by it because of playing a concertina.
Of course.
And so I sang that evening.
You asked him to...
I asked him to send
for
me...
for the words, so he... He sent you the words and the tune, and she learned it.
And this is something about folk music that I think is important, and that is how you find music.
Everywhere.
You say everywhere.
Everywhere.
But almost nobody's exposed. You find music everywhere, but
no
one's exposed to this stuff. So if somebody... Now, well, I read on your website about something called a song swap.
A song swap.
Yes.
Song swaps are fairly common. They are informal gatherings of people who enjoy singing. And they take on their different kinds of song swaps. In some, everybody brings music or sheets of words to pass out to other people, and so that people can sing along. I like best the kinds of song swaps where people sing songs that they have learned and practiced. They either present them or they ask people to join in the choruses. Other times people are welcome to bring a book along or their own lyrics to sort of crib. But
you just sit around the living room or the dining room table or...
Yeah.
So they're small events.
These are just small community, you know. If you know three or four other people who kind of like to sing things, you get on the phone and you say, hey, let's get together and swap some songs. Maybe have a little potluck supper beforehand or something.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
I've never been to one of these.
Nothing formal, nothing...
No one ever wants to borrow my songs.
Well,
don't want to swap my songs.
You know, you don't say, here's a song, I give this to you, usually. Although occasionally that happens. I've had people say, I want you to sing this song. But you're just sharing songs that you love and that you're excited about. And sometimes they are themed. In the Folklore Society of Greater Washington, the first Friday...
Our home club.
It's our home club.
Home club,
home
okay.
Club. Every...
So you have a home club.
We have a home club.
This is like bikers with their home clubs.
It's kind of like that, yeah.
I wouldn't know from bikers. But I can imagine.
Can you buy merchandise for the club? Do you have a special patch?
Let's see.
They do have a logo, I think.
Do they have a logo?
Yeah.
I've seen T-shirts.
we do. The Folklore Society puts on a festival.
They put on 240 events a year.
Yeah. 240 events a year?
Give or take.
And this is not including a song swap.
No, doesn't it include the song swap?
Well, they have a monthly open sing.
Monthly open sing. So
which
that,
is
a little
sort of the
though.
Kind of thing that we... What we're talking about is what we call a song swap. They also have a monthly gospel sing and a
monthly gospel sing. Okay, so people are more
Monthly sacred harp sing and storytelling and two kinds of dances every week.
Great and
okay,
dances.
So you can keep
your
ears open for things like this, but you don't need to find one. You can make it happen if you're somebody that likes to sing.
Yes,
that enjoys. A little warble in the shower or something.
Okay.
You can just talk to people, talk to other friends and say, you know, I like singing. I wish there were more singing around here. And when you find other people who say, yeah, so do I, then you say, listen, why don't we get some folks together and come on over to my place on Friday night. And we'll have a little song swap. We'll have a potluck supper, and we'll, you know,
and
sing
see
some
what
songs.
Happens.
See what happens.
Let's get some folks together, some local folks together. By the way, you are all tuned in to the program called Local Folk, and I'm your host, Steve Kerrigan, and I'm with Dennis and Judy Cook, who I met down at a folk event. It didn't have a song swap. It did have a song. It had a sing-along.
It had a bunch of song swaps.
It had many song swaps.
Oh, it had many song swaps.
It had tune swaps. And
I just have to explain what this thing was. It was like all kinds of different things going on, and you could kind of show up wherever you wanted. Although, you know, I'm a singer, so I was trying to find the songs, and most of the time people were singing songs, you know, in certain areas. But what you're saying is that people were...
I'm saying those were song swaps.
Oh, that those were song swaps.
Sure.
Okay, informal, but there was, like, so many people there. Wouldn't that be more of a sing-along? You see, because, for example, I've never pulled out music and tried to really hand it out to people at
And that's fine. Yeah, we tend not to either.
Wasn't going on there.
That wasn't It wasn't going on there. I didn't see that. No. I didn't see people saying, "Well, one time I did it, but it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was something for Occupy somewhere."
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Had a
it's less common.
I recorded a little bit of it though,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I picked up some things, which brings me to
you can do song swaps, you can do tune swaps, you can just find people who like to do the kind of music you like to do, and start sharing it with them.
I want to know about first of all, if you want to learn some songs or tunes or something on Friday night down at the press room, there's a session, which is similar.
Yep.
It's a session. That's what I go to. And it's songs and it's tunes, and you can at least come on down on a Friday night between 4 and 9 and hear some stuff. And through there, if you like it and you like the people that you meet and you want to get involved, then I'm sure that there are You chat with them because they could help
tell
you.
Tell them you want to find some more of.
Yeah, they could give you resources.
Yes, absolutely.
Or there, a perfectly good question is where'd you get that song?
Yeah, see, that's always a good one.
Where'd you get that song? Or you can say, in addition, you can say, I'd love to sing that song.
I'd love to sing that song. I've said that to some people who have come on this program
and
before.
Most people that we know in the folk community will say, you know, fine, give me your email, I'll send it to you. Or,
they're delighted to
I
have
got
you.
It out of such and such a book. Do you have that?
Or off such and such a record.
Or off such and such a record.
You said that to me when we met. I said somebody at a concert mentioned like the Golden Book of American Songs or something. And I said, what is this Golden Book of American Songs?
One of many, many collections of songs that are fun to sing.
A place that you can go that doesn't cost a thing. and has a fantastic collection. I think it's up around 6,000-7,000 songs. About 2/3 of them have tunes, is the digital tradition.
Digital tradition?
It was Mudcat. Mudcat.org, and look at digital tradition, and those are...
Are there recordings?
There are...
MIDI files
that'll give you the tunes and the words, and there's often a discography. That whole thing got started at one of the Washington getaways.
Oh, really?
When three of us were sitting down and saying exactly what we were talking about now. Gee, I like that song that you sang. Did you have a copy of it? You know, could you give me a copy? And, you know, Susan opened her notebook where she had all the things typed out, and she handed me the page. And I said, well, don't you need this? She said, no, I've got it on computer.
Oh.
And I had my notebook there, and I was handing out pages, and I had them all on computer.
Yep.
And Jennifer was doing the same thing. And then we realized, you know, we've got a collection here of over 300 songs on our own computers. Why don't we get together and swap discs?
So, and this is partially how Mudcat got started?
Not Mudcat. This is how the digital tradition got started.
Digital tradition got
Which
started.
Which can be accessed through Mudcat.
Which can be accessed through Mudcat. Okay, yeah. Because the first place that I went when I came back, in the first place I think a lot of people go when they come back from a folk festival, is Mudcat, to try to find the lyrics to these songs and to see if there's any information out there.
And Mudcat's a wonderful discussion group for folkies.
It's a wonderful discussion group.
You can post questions, and there are a lot of extremely knowledgeable people who follow Mudcat and can give you sometimes more answer than you really thought existed.
Well, I have to say that I'm glad that you mentioned Mudcat, because I don't think that I've mentioned Mudcat even once, and it is a huge resource. Like, when I came back, I tried to find the words to, there was a... something Ken Chatz sang about being a... darn it, I can't even remember it. Oh, all right, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. All right. And while I think, I'm going to give you a little info from our underwriters. Programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by our underwriters, which include the New Hampshire Gazette, Daystar Computer Services, the Portsmouth Herald, and the Press Room. Dodger. It was about being a Dodger. So-and-so's a Dodger.
Oh, D-Day Dodgers?
I'm a Dodger,
a well-known Dodger.
A well-known Dodger. That's what it was. He's a well-known Dodger, and I'm a Dodger, too. Mm. So I went back, and I had to look at all that I had to look at all that stuff. That's one thing that I've
Google
that I
also works, because I think most of digital tradition
is accessed
is
through
indexed.
That.
Google has picked it up, and so it'll get you to the link.
Yeah, it'll get you to the link. Google it. Whatever you want.
I want to play a song, though. I think I'd like to play a song right now. You brought in a couple CDs. We started with this one right here, and it's called Judy CD. One of them is called Songs of the Civil War, Tenting Tonight by Judy Cook, and it's part of a talk that you do as well, right?
It's not part of it, but a lot of the songs that are on there are included in the three Civil War programs that I do that feature songs of the Civil War and the letters of my great-great-grandparents.
Okay.
As well as projected images.
I want to give a taste of this CD to everyone, and then I'd like to just talk a little bit about how to work your way through the folk world, and you're a professional at it, and how that happens. Right now I have in the Tenting Tonight CD, and I'm wondering what you think might be a good song. I know you like to do ballads. Is there a good ballad on there that you prefer over others, or?
We're just taking a look here.
All right.
We could do how much time do you want to spend?
Oh, a few minutes.
A few minutes. Going across the mountains?
Going across the mountains.
Number eight.
Sing that.
Number eight. And here we go. Going across the mountains.
That's short.
We're all ready
That's
to
short.
Go.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. Okay, here we go. Going across the mountains here on Local Folk here on WSCA.
Going across the mountain. Oh, fare thee well. Going across the mountain.
Oh, fare thee well. Got my rations on my back, my powder it is dry. Go and cross the mountain, Chrissy, don't you cry. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Go and cross the mountain to join the boys in blue. When this war is over, I'll come back to you. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Go and cross the mountain, if I have to crawl, to give Jeff's men a little taste of my rifle ball. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Way before it's good daylight, if nothing happens to me, I'll be way out yonder in old Tennessee. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Go and cross the mountain, oh, fare thee well. Spect you'll miss me when I'm gone, but I'm going through. When this fightin's over, I'll come back to you. When this fightin's over, I'll come back to you.
You're listening to Local Folk on WSCA. That was a song by, performed by Judy Cook. And I just want to let you know that if you want more information about Judy and her music, you can go to www.judycook.net. All right, judycook.net, and it's just like it sounds. Judy, I would like to just chat with you for just a couple minutes at least about how to be a professional folk musician. You became a professional folk musician, and what is your bread and butter? Is it performing, and where?
I'm a kept woman, and I live on my husband's pension. But a very, very serious hobby is performing around this country and Britain as well. I do a lot of themed programs. Ever since I found Civil War letters from my great-great-grandparents, since I'd already been singing, I put together what is now 3 different Civil War programs that feature songs of the Civil War, tell their stories through those songs and the letters that I found and pictures. So I give those programs all around this country and Britain.
So you do more than just sing. You're also talking about these letters, and it's a multimedia presentation, isn't it?
It is multimedia, and I read excerpts from the letters. So the programs are really what they call primary source, because the letters were written during the Civil War, the songs were written during the Civil War, and sung during the Civil War.
Most of the pictures are from the Civil War period.
So it's really that time I put very little of my own talking into it. You may not believe that because I talk so much here.
Question for you. When you say primary source, now this happens with music as well, and I just want to let people know, like, sort of these different ways that people come to the music. Primary source would be one way, so to speak, if we want to get technical about it.
Primary source is an educator's buzzword. That kind of means this is the material that was around at the historic time that you're presenting, rather than
talking about it from a perspective
100 years later.
100 yeah. years later, okay.
Or 200 years later.
So if you have letters that were written at the time, songs that were written at the time, pictures that were taken at the time, that is a primary source. A secondary source would be, I do have some of those songs as well, like Green Castle Jenny, which is a lovely song on there, and one of my favorites, but the poem was written probably 30, 40 years after the Civil War, and the tune was written by Bob Zentz, who lives in Norfolk right now.
Okay,
and he wrote that in the middle of the 20th century.
So do you find... Does it matter to you where your music comes to? Do you look for primary source stuff, or do you lean towards it?
I guess I do lean towards it, yeah. But you know, when a song captures your imagination and just says, "I'd like you to sing me, please," you don't question it.
It's sort of different, I think, doing the historically themed programs where you're focusing on trying to present a historical picture in time versus a folk concert where it's, as you say, the songs that say sing me, you fall in love with and you learn them and you sing them.
Dennis is absolutely right. That's the difference. That's the difference.
So if you were going, for example, I heard about this thing. It's the New Hampshire Humanities Council. And, you know, if somebody wants a presentation, you know, people try out to be on this to be presenters on this mm-hmm. council. People call up and say, hey,
it's a roster.
And somebody says, hey, I want something about the Civil War. And they look and they say, oh, Judy Cook does something on the Civil War. And you had to try out for it and you had to do your presentation. And the council says, oh, this is really good. So that when people call up, they can say, okay, Judy, go out and do this presentation on the Civil War. So that's the type of way that some people can perform around here. I know that. Mm-hmm. Are you involved in any way in anything like that, or like a state-sanctioned anything? No. Do you market yourself?
I call people up and say, hi, I sing. Can I come sing and you give me money? And they...
That's a good way to do it.
And word of mouth is sometimes very helpful. And I get a lot of repeat invitations to come back and give a different program. In fact, that's how I came to have three different Civil War programs, because I had already done my first Civil War program for places, and they say, we want you to do another Civil War program, but we want a different one this time.
Different Civil War program.
Right, so instead of doing one man's Civil War, they wanted women of the Civil War. So I use more of my great-great-grandmother's letters, and I use songs that are from the perspective of the mothers, wives, sisters, and sweethearts of the soldiers instead of just through the eyes of my great-great-grandparents.
Now, this music that you play, on your website it said that the type of music, and I made a comment about it in my introduction, about your music being quote-unquote Anglo-American. What is that exactly?
It's songs from England and America, and within America, the songs of people who came from Britain.
Came from Britain. Okay. Well, okay. Well, that's a good explanation to me. But was I right?
You might say it's because they're in English.
English
songs. As opposed
songs.
To Spanish or French or German.
German
or because mm-hmm. there are a lot of immigrants and a lot of songs over here from those languages as well.
That's true. And we you know.
I don't.
Which
sing them.
I don't sing them either. So, I mean.
Except a few.
Well, people picture what, you know, the great wave of, you know, going west and doing all those things was like a bunch of Englishmen, basically. But that really wasn't the case at all.
Wasn't the case.
I mean, it was all kinds of languages and all kinds of different countries and people that were coming over to do
that. There's the wave from the West Coast moving east, which was Chinese. And I don't sing any of those either.
No. You know? Okay. Yeah. So those would be, in a lot of ways, I'm wrong in my assessment that there was not really a renaissance or a resurgence of this, because we've always, or at the very least, some of these other musics are not nearly as prevalent as what you would say English, you know, folk songs or songs sung in English.
I think it depends on the circles you travel in.
Well, I know that you guys
if you're
surrounded
in a Hispanic community, you've got Hispanic music. You don't have.
Do you have Hispanic American?
They're not
music?
Singing like, English ballads.
Absolutely.
They're not singing English ballads. Okay. Oh. Okay. Yeah. So it's the circle. So if I guess you're right. You know, If I, I'm sure that there's. Well, I had somebody who
I
had somebody.
So I do English. I did English language songs.
English language songs, but the ones that you do, you know, then it's not really the blues, though, and it's not really.
No, that's true. You know, that's true. I find myself drawn more to the story songs.
Story songs.
Story songs and chorus songs, and I guess the blues are as well. But
No, I don't know. I just I don't know. Just I love these songs, and I love the songs that well, the ones that I heard, I enjoyed a lot that you sang. So, and they do
Thank
have
you.
Like a distinct sort of feeling, kind of to them.
Sort sometimes of 19th century
kind of,
yeah,
it has that flavor. You know, it just has that flavor. Yeah. It has that Civil War kind of. No, but it's more than the Civil War. You do more than the Civil War.
I do.
And when you're doing it, and when you're, do you dress for the period ever?
I do on the Civil War programs and the Lincoln's America programs and Mark Twain's America programs. When I do ghost,
I mean, we dress to come on your show.
Yeah, I see that. You have notes on your suspenders, so yeah, it's very good for radio.
These are the only suspenders I have with me. I need them to hold the pants up.
Hey, but while you're doing this, you are speaking into a mic, and I just wanted to get back to this thing about approaching the mic and going forward and backward on the mic. You know, I mean, I know people that like to try to play the mic as a different, you know, as an instrument into itself. Are there times when that's appropriate and times where it's not appropriate, or do you think that it's always, because you can't always hear what you sound like?
I'd say it's always appropriate if you're going to be performing with a microphone, then you want to spend a little time to get familiar with it. And it's, do you want a 2 minute?
I have 2 minutes. Yeah. So please.
Yeah. I mean, okay, the microphone is sensitive in the direction that it points. If you think of it's got a handle at the back and there's a little ball at the front, and it's pointing forward. Well, you want that to point towards your mouth. If you're working in a studio, you might work it at arm's length or half arm's length. But if you're on a live soundstage where somebody's trying to amplify what you're doing, you want to work it at about a fist distance from you. Because if you get too far back or speak or sing too quietly, you don't give the sound engineer enough signal to boost. And a typical place to put it, my first choice is to put it down below your chin, kind of pointing up your nose, just below where you can feel the air from a plosive. If you say, you know, Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, and you put your finger in front of your mouth and you feel the puh, the air, don't put it there, because it's going to come out as a boom. So put it down below that. That also means that the audience can see your face, which is nice. They can watch you grin or watch your teeth chatter or whatever's going on up there. And if, you know, about the only other thing is if you get feedback, which is that whistling sound, most people, back away from the mic. And what you want to do is exactly the opposite. Get closer to the mic, speak louder.
If you have a sound man.
If you have a sound man. Because the problem is that you're not giving him enough signal to amplify for the audience to hear.
So what you're saying is that the cause of feedback is because you're really not giving the sound guy enough of a signal, which is your voice, enough volume, or enough proximity to be able to detect that volume. And so what he's got to do is turn it up.
He's trying to turn the gain up. And when he turns it up far enough, then the sound from the speaker comes back to the microphone loud enough to amplify itself. And that's what feedback is.
That's what feedback is.
So you don't want him to have to turn the gain up.
You can also get it by pointing your microphone at the speaker. Or at the monitor.
At the speaker, and it'll just create whatever. Okay, so
if you have monitors on stage, the famous one is the fiddle player with the microphone mounted on his fiddle.
Yes.
Who finishes the set, leans forward to look at his set list, and puts his fiddle right in front of the monitor.
That makes feedback.
And then wonders why he gets feedback.
And then wonders why. Well, I'm glad that you were on because I've, you know, to talk about this with the microphone. Would you suggest that folk musicians that want to go out and be professional and play on larger stages practice on a microphone?
Very sometimes? Definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Very definitely. And you can do it at home. I mean, you can go to Radio Shack and get a $10 microphone and plug it into your stereo and listen to yourself as you talk. Move the microphone around your head, face. If you turn your face away from the microphone, like turn your face from side to side just standing there, the volume will go down. But if you pivot around the microphone, you sort of turn with your hips instead of your neck, you'll stay on the mic. So those are kind of little tricks to work with one. But yeah, I mean, $10 in your home stereo and you can practice.
Well, those are, I mean, and the reason that I ask is because a lot of times people get into folk music, and let's face it, folk music in a lot of ways, I don't want to say should, but let's just say that it often happens not in front of a microphone and not on a stage and at a song swap where there's six people around a table or at a sing-along where there's, you know, they're in a larger room or in a session where there's no microphones going on. And so sometimes there's this thing like you shouldn't have a microphone, but sometimes you need to be sharing with people and that requires something like that. And if you are going to share with somebody, this is what I'm telling my audience. If you're going to share folk music with somebody, make sure that you share it in a way that they can hear it.
Yeah.
And a way that sounds good too.
I mean, in a way, you know, one perspective is folk music is the music that the folk do.
That's true.
It's what you do in your living room, in your kitchen. It's what you sing while you're washing dishes or mowing the lawn. You can get great harmonies mowing the lawn. Just tune yourself to the lawnmower.
I didn't even think of that. I mow on.
It's a drone. It's like singing with bagpipes, you know.
It's like singing with bagpipes. I got to try that. I swear I recently started mowing the lawn.
There you go.
So you guys wanted to, I mean, I would like it if you mentioned, you've already mentioned a lot of resources such as Mudcat, and you've mentioned song swaps, and you also mentioned your home society that you...
Folklore Society of Greater Washington.
Folklore Society of Greater Washington.
And, of course, the Folk Song Society of Greater Boston up here.
The Folk Song Society of Greater Boston.
Yes, FSSGB.org.
I don't even know that.
FSSGB.org.
They put on a lot of concerts and events throughout the year. We don't live up here, so I can't tell you which ones, but FSSGB.org and the New England Folk Festival,
NEFA.
A big, it's end of April, and it is lots and lots of contra dancing and lots of song swaps.
That's great. I mean, we had somebody on from NEFA, a fellow named David Bateman, and we went over the NEFA. I mean, it's just overwhelming how much
it's fantastic.
Is going on with that.
I think it's the biggest dance and song festival in the country.
Dance and song festival.
Yeah. And there are
two schools simultaneously.
There's a wonderful folk festival in New Bedford. There's folk festivals right here, of course. There's
folk
waterfront.
Festivals,
there's the Old Songs Festival in Altamont, New York.
Old Songs Festival I have heard of. Yeah. But I think that if people are around here, if you wanted to start local, you could. The last weekend of September is the Portsmouth Maritime Music Festival. It's different, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of sea shanties and things like that. But it's also ballads,
which are fun and a great way to start and get into it.
I think so too.
Sea shanties are 80% chorus.
80% chorus. They're work songs. They
were the work songs for the sailors.
Work songs, and they you know, it's a lot of repetition and it's a lot of community.
Oh yeah.
I mean, tell me, how long have you been doing the Mystic, doing the sound for Mystic Seaport?
Is this either sixth or seventh year?
So now are you up till all hours like they are at these things?
No, I go to bed because otherwise my ears are no good for the next day.
Hey, what about ear protection? Do you wear ear protection?
Not when I'm mixing.
Not when you're mixing. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, when I'm driving the car, I put a earplug in the outside ear.
Oh, really? Never heard of that. You mean like if you have the window down?
No.
Even but on the window side. There's still
on
a
the
lot
window
of
side.
Noise.
The cars are very noisy.
And in an airplane.
I didn't know
always
that.
In airplanes. We actually picked up
you arrived
a pair
refreshed.
Recently with of the sound noise canceling headphones.
Have.
They're a little expensive.
Yeah.
But they were very good. And just you can get these little foam earplugs for like 50 cents. If you can't find any locally, go to your local small airport.
Huh.
The small plane airport, they'll always have them.
I didn't even think mm-hmm. about this. Well, I didn't even, but I do know that it's, and I will say that these are all good tips on how to protect your hearing. And the other way to protect your hearing is
don't
to do what
to
you
music.
Do.
Yeah.
What? What?
How about
heresy?
How about this? Why? How about when you go to a show or when you're doing something like mixing a show, keep it at a natural volume.
Absolutely. Keep it at a listening level.
At a listening level.
It's a little bit more than a conversational level.
That's great. This is really super duper good advice. You guys have come on here and given me a mountain of advice and for my players. And we only have a couple minutes left. So I have about 6 minutes left. So I'm going to wind it down just a little bit because some of those 6 minutes is going to include a song from another one of your CDs. It's going to be the one that we're going to part with. And this is going to be on the... Pardon me. It's called Lincoln's America is another CD that you have. And Judy, I want to just let people know that if you want to know a little bit more about Judy Cook or where to get her music, for example, and where she's performing, it's www.judycook.net, just like it's spelled JudyCook.net. Also, if you have any questions for me on local folk, you can email me at scarrigan@wscafm.org. All right. And I just want to let you know also next week is going to be a special week for me because I think I'm going to be interviewing myself.
Cool.
Next week is our pledge drive.
If you get any good answers, you know.
I'm going to learn a lot.
If you start arguing and lose the argument.
It's time to stop.
I'm done for. I think I'm going to. It's our pledge drive next week. So I want to make sure that I don't take time from somebody by going on and on about this pledge drive. But you do need to know about this pledge drive. We're doing a pledge drive. We need it because we need to keep this station running. And it's an incredibly important way for me to bring people like the Cooks onto the air and to share with you about their musical histories, their musical selves, how they got into the music, resources for you all in order to get involved in folk a little bit, some great stories, some different ways to do it. Thank you so much for coming on. We had a perspective today.
Pleasure.
Yes. Yeah, we had a perspective. We had two perspectives today that just phenomenally excellent. And to combine into the combination of folk music and mixing folk music with amplifiers is something that's is almost a taboo subject. So we were on the cutting edge today, I think. But, you know, it's got to sound good. Like on this Lincoln's America CD, we're going to leave you with a song that is, what were we thinking of?
We were thinking of doing Ring the Bell Watchman, which is near the end because that was the original of a Cease song that a lot of people know.
Ring the Bell Second Mate.
Strike
okay.
the Bell Second Mate.
I need to let you all know that that this is something that I didn't know about it and something that we can touch on it just to make, could you, Ring the Bell, there's a song and it's on, even on one of Jeff Warner's CDs, who was just on a couple of weeks ago, Strike the Bell Second Mate.
Which came later than this one, which was written in 1865 by Henry Clay Work, the same man who wrote Grandfather's Clock. And he wrote it in 1865, same year that the Civil War ended. And it's just got such a catchy tune. There are lots of parodies that have been written, not only Strike the Bell, Second Mate, but one called Click Go the Shears, which is about Australian sheep shearing, and so and on and on. Anyway, listen to this.
Oh, my goodness.
It's good.
It's so good.
There's so much fun when you get into this stuff.
It's so much fun.
I mean, pretty excited about it.
You know, you hear it when you're a kid, and maybe you don't think too much, but then something will get you, something will hit you, and then you start digging, and then you start digging it, and next thing you know, you're...
Sometimes, somewhere, a song will grab you.
That's right, and I hope it was here on Local Folk. We will see you next time.
Thanks a lot.
High in the belfry, the old sexton stands, grasping the rope with his thin bony hands. Fixed is his gaze, as by some magic spell, till he hears the distant murmur ring. Ring the bell, watchman, ring, ring, ring. Yes, yes, the good news is now on the wing. Yes, yes, they come, and with tidings to tell. Glorious and blessed tidings ring, ring the bell. Bearing his long silver locks to the breeze, first for a moment he drops on his knees. Then, with a vigor that few could excel, answers he the welcome bidding, ring, ring the bell. Ring the bell, watchman, ring, ring, ring. Yes, yes, the good news is now on the wing. Yes, yes, they come, and with tidings to tell. Glorious and blessed tidings ring, ring the bell. Hark, from the hilltop the first signal gun thunders the word that some great deed is done. Hark, through the valleys the long echoes swell, ever and anon repeating, ring, ring the bell. Ring the bell, watchman, ring, ring, ring. Yes, yes, the good news is now on the wing. Yes, yes, they come, and with tidings to tell. Glorious and blessed tidings ring, ring the bell. Bonfires are burning, and rockets ascend. No meager triumph these tokens portend. Shout, shout, my brothers, for all is well. 'Tis the universal chorus, ring, ring the bell. Ring the bell, watchman, ring, ring, ring. Yes, yes, the good news is now on the wing. Yes, yes, they come, and with tidings to tell. Glorious and blessed tidings, ring, ring the bell.